So he would have us cigarettes out on our arms to be inducted into the family. The rules didn't apply to him, and I loved that. I acted tough. If anybody messed with me, I would show no fear and I would attack them physically or verbally. There wasn't one moment of the day where I drew a sober breath.
Welcome to the Let Good Things In show. I'm your host, Amanda Acker. I am so happy you are here. At the Let Good Things In show, we talk all about second chances, resiliency, following your intuition, and even music. Listen to hear stories of hope and to be inspired. Remember, you are stronger than you think. Let's dive in. Hi, my amazing humans. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. As always, I would absolutely love to hear from you. Send me a message over on Instagram at the Let Good Things In show, or you can even send me an email, amanda@amandaacker.com. That's A-C-K-E-R. On today's episode, I had the absolute pleasure of having a conversation with Sarah Muntean. She's an incredible human out in the world working to help the formerly incarcerated, as she is one herself. I'm so fortunate to have met her through Kyle Smith, via Determination Incorporated. Sarah owns a company called All American Cleaning, and she does construction cleanup and hires a lot of other formerly incarcerated people. And her story goes through, you know, a lot of trauma that she went through at a young age that led to her incarceration, and then what her life's been like since she's been released. So without further ado, let's dive in. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Hi. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So just to start things off, like, could you just tell your story? Like, I know that you've been incarcerated. So could you tell, like, what kind of led to your incarceration?
Sure. That is a long story. How much time do we have?
Well, like 40 minutes.
Gotcha. Okay. So I'll give you the basic rundown. So my story, first of all, something that I have in common with probably a lot of other formerly incarcerated individuals out there is that I just didn't have a proper support system. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I was raised by two white collar alcoholic cocaine salespeople. And it was a lot of fun. But yeah, it was great. My dad was in professional baseball.
Wow.
There was always a party going on. But I just had no idea how to be civilized.
Yeah.
Really. I was like the wild party girl and I didn't know how to take anything seriously. And, I just didn't take school seriously, relationship seriously. Everything was just wild. So another part of my story is I suffered from severe sexual harassment from my peers growing up, and didn't have, you know, the proper support system in my life to know how to deal with that. So I would go to school and be publicly humiliated and sexually harassed. And I wouldn't tell anybody about it. I would just go home and it was a party at home and nobody really knew how I felt. And I just had a lot of pain. I was a lot of pain. And I didn't know how to deal with it at all. And I internalized, instead of, you know, having the maturity at 14, 15 years old to realize that maybe it's a compliment. Maybe it's not a bad, it's, you know, that people are giving you all of this attention. Instead, I internalized it and said, I'm just bad. Mm. So that's what I basically said. Okay, I'll show you that I am. So I just started hanging out with the rebels and I started smoking weed and drinking. Mm-hmm. And that led to a heavy amount of cocaine and Klonopin.
Yeah, that was my best friend, Klonopin.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. Nothing mattered.
Yeah.
Give me a Klonopin and a few beers. Who cares?
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I got in a lot of fights. So when people would try to humiliate me, or men or women, I would physically attack them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so it was fight or flight, right?
Yeah.
A long time I was taking the flight route and I would get all like scared and embarrassed, and that didn't feel good. I got tired of that. So in my mind, taking my power back meant being physical with others and showing them I'm going to fight. I'm not just going to take this anymore. And that led to the reason why I was incarcerated, was for assault. But before I get to that, so like when I was 17, I wanted out of my parents' house and I moved in with a guy that lived right by my high school. He was 10 years older than me.
Holy crap.
He was a millionaire. He inherited a bunch of money. His family owned farm land. And there were like 10 of us high schoolers living at this guy's house.
That's weird.
Yep. Oh, it was super weird. And he became my boyfriend. Yeah. I was like the ringleader. He was the ringleader and I was like the queen of this group. And I loved it. It was great in my mind then. And he did meth. And that was something I'd never been exposed to before. And things got really crazy, really crazy. So, wow. Unbelievable things that I saw.
I could imagine.
Yeah. So you'll see on my arm, I think it's this arm, there's a whole bunch of...
Oh, yeah, I see them. Look like burn marks. Are they burn marks?
Yes. So he would have us put cigarettes out on our arms to be inducted into the family. And,
wow.
It was really... And he was just a very crazy character. The rules didn't apply to him. And I loved that. It was very freeing and liberating. So to make the long story short, I acted tough. That was my defense. I acted tough, fearless. If anybody messed with me, I would show no fear and I would attack them physically or verbally. And there wasn't one moment of the day where I drew a sober breath. Mm. Because if I was sober, all of the real stuff would crop up into my mind. The shame, the guilt, the fear, the low self-esteem. So I had to shut all that out because it was unbearable. I graduated high school, though, by the grace of God.
That's a good thing.
But with a 1.8 GPA.
Wow.
1.8. And on graduation day, I showed up late, drunk, and with some crappy t-shirt and shorts and flip-flops underneath my cap and gown. And I just like hitched a ride from some chick I went to school with that I'd never hung out before to graduation. Yeah. And they made me walk in the back of the line, but I made it.
Why did they make you walk in the back of the line?
because I didn't show up to any of the rehearsals, graduation rehearsals. And that still to this day, like, makes me so sad that I was so sick and just inebriated and just sick is the best word to describe it, that I didn't even get to enjoy my final days with my class.
Yeah.
My high school graduating class. I chose to skip out on like the best times of a high schooler's life to get high and drunk with this weird group of people. And that still to this day just makes me sad for the girl that I used to be. Yeah. So 3 weeks after graduation, me and the family woke up one day at like 10 o'clock in the morning with nothing to eat. I don't even remember eating then.
Yeah, like, there's probably no eating. When you're using, you're high all the time, eating is like, at least for me, like, I didn't think about eating. I was skinnier than I ever was when I was using, so.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we had no money, and instead of saying, hey, let's get some money to get something to eat, we were like, we need money to drink.
Yep.
So it was to be honest with you, I don't tell this story very often because it's pretty bizarre, but that night I had a dream that I was in the bathroom of some hotel and I met a lady in there named Pamela, an older woman, and she left her purse in the bathroom and there was $700 in it. I had a dream that that happened.
Oh, wow.
So this day when we went out to get some money, we were walking down an alley and there was a Lexus in the alley. And this is real life. This isn't the dream. This is that one. And their ringleader guy, his name was Jason. Jason looked in the Lexus and there was a purse in it. And the next thing I know, he picked up a big rock and he bashed the window.
Oh.
And he grabbed the purse and looked in the wallet and the ID said Pamela and there was $700 in it.
What?
Yep. Yep.
That's really bizarre. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we took off and went to the hood to buy crack and hey, $700. We're going to have a freaking great day with that. Right.
Yeah.
So we did. And then later on, the police stopped us on foot. They found credit cards in Jason's possession and arrested him. And I was terrified.
I bet.
I didn't have any money or credit cards on me. And they were like, you're free to go. And I was terrified to be free to go. I was like, what am I going to do without this guy, without this chaos, without the money to get, you know, what am I going to do? And I just froze. And they decided to like, I think I made some rude comment to the cop. And some way or another, he pinned me on the ground and I assaulted him.
You assaulted a police officer?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I went to jail. And they charged me with assault on a law enforcement officer, criminal negligence, and tampering with a motor vehicle at 18 years old, 3 weeks after graduating high school.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they put me on SIS probation. I didn't go to prison immediately. I just had to stay sober and keep my nose clean and
right.
I couldn't do it.
Not easy.
Yeah. There was so many emotional wounds and I just had no freaking idea how to live as an adult. Yeah. I had no clue. No one ever showed me and I never paid attention. So I couldn't do it. There was too unbearable to stay sober. God. So ultimately, I ended up violating the probation and going to prison for 6 months.
So you went to actual prison or did you go to county jail?
I went to actual prison.
For 6 months. And what, you know, like your story is just, there's so many questions. I wish we had more time because I could ask you so many questions. But, you know, then you go to, so I know like getting sober was, seemed impossible for you back then. And I can relate to that, which I'm sure a lot of us can. And then you go to prison. So you're just, you have to be sober in prison. So what was that like when you first got there? Did you go through withdrawal? Were you sick? Like, or did you get help? Like, how did that look for you?
To be honest with you, the day that my PO violated me, and I was going to prison, I remember sitting in the cop car saying, "Thank you, God." I was like, "Thank you." Because I lived with my parents at that time and they were addicts. They were alcoholics. It was another part of my story. My mom is just very sick. Very, very sick. And I'm not going to get into all those details and expose her stuff because her and I've accepted who she is, but I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. That's fine.
So yeah, I just remember saying, "Thank you, God," because I don't know if I would still be alive today if I hadn't gone to prison.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy how like something that, you know, we fear so much. I mean, I think all of us fear getting arrested and going to jail. You know, but somehow that becomes your saving grace. And if it wasn't for that experience and you getting there, that you may not still be here, you know. And then when you got into prison, you know, did you find help inside prison for your addictions? Was there anybody there that kind of guided you so when you got out, you didn't go right back to your old habits?
No, I didn't do anything like that. But I was so disgusted. I did not have a good time in prison.
No.
Let's just say that.
You mean it wasn't a party?
No. It just, it wasn't for me. I actually found myself. I went to rehab before prison, before I got violated. I found myself in rehab in county jail and prison. And I actually learned I'm not a hard ass at all. At all. I'm like, I love to dance. I love to sing. What my dream job would be to like be on Broadway. Like
oh,
I'm
a
nerdy, like pippy. I like love. I like getting along with people.
Yeah.
I like to sing and dance and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a hard ass. I don't like fighting. So in prison, a lot of the women would make fun of me, but it wasn't like in a mean way.
Yeah.
But they would just be like, "Oh, peace, Sarah. Peace. And chicks would come up to me and they'd say, "Hey, what you got in your canteen? Is that lotion?" Oh, shit. Oh my God.
That's okay.
Perfect. We're back. Okay. They would be like, "Oh, what is that, some face cream that you ordered?" And I was like, "Yeah, do you want some? Here, have some of my stuff." And the other ladies would be like, "Hey, they're trying to take advantage of you. You know that, right?" And I'm like, what's wrong with sharing lotion?
Yeah. Well, in jail, it's, you know, it's so different, you know, for people who haven't been in jail, like people are very protective of their shit in jail, you know, and if you get caught stealing from someone in jail, that's bad. But, you know, a lot of people will tell you that, like, if you are a giving person, you know, they'll say like they're taking advantage of you. But like you said, like, what's wrong with sharing? Like, why can't we all just like get along? Imagine if prison was just a bunch of women or a bunch of men just like kumbayaing and getting along and sharing things. Like, how much easier would it be, you know? But that's not, unfortunately, that is not at all how it is. And I don't think it ever will be. But,
right,
you know, I'm right there with you. I wish that was the experience, you know?
Yeah. 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 I viewed it as very animalistic. Mm-hmm. It was just so, I didn't jump on the prison train. Like, I didn't adopt all of the lingos that you'll hear in there.
Yeah.
I have nothing but love for lesbians, but I'm not one of them.
Right.
I'm not. And in prison, they call it gay for the stay, straight at the gate.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't do it. I'm not interested. Like, yeah, more power to you, but I can't do it. So that, I mean, there's just a lifestyle that I saw a lot of women getting sucked into, a different kind of mentality. And thank God I saw that and I didn't get sucked into it.
Yeah, because I believe it's really easy to get sucked into that because, number one, you're scared. You know, I don't think anyone goes to jail not scared in some way. You know, we're all scared of it. You don't know what to expect. And especially if you know, if you've only gone once, so it would be your first time going in. But, you know, there is that mentality of, like, you know, you got to be hard. You got to protect your shit. You can't share anything. Like, you have to. And it's just, like you said, it's very animalistic. And if you're not careful, like, you will fall into that because it's survival, right? So imagine, like, being in for, like, years. Like, it could have been totally different, mm-hmm, because you would then have to think, okay, like, I have to survive this for 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is. Like, you're going to have to adapt in some way. But it's fortunate that, you know, you saw that and were smart enough to kind of just keep to yourself, essentially, you know, because there's a lot of peer pressure that goes on behind bars too. You know, like, here, will you smuggle this in? Oh, you're going out on a visit, like, stick tobacco up your ass. That was something that was proposed to me. Meanwhile, I'm a pregnant woman and someone asked me to stick tobacco up my ass. Like, no, not happening. Like, find somebody else because I'm not risking my freedom anymore for you to have tobacco, which I can't even smoke it because I'm pregnant. So, no.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like,
right,
crazy,
right,
things in jail, crazy. Like,
yeah,
it's a whole other world behind bars. But anyways, yeah, so you're in for 6 months and then you get out. So what was life like post-incarceration?
So when I was incarcerated, I mainly hung out with the older ladies in there that, yep, were 60, 70 plus. And we played Scrabble. And they really mentally prepared me for going back out in the real world.
Oh.
They were really supportive and tried to coach me into not coming back.
Yeah.
Because the counselors and all the, you know, inmates would say, oh, you'll be back. You'll,
oh, they, be back. I know, yeah. It's like, no, I won't.
And I was like, yeah, okay, no, I won't. And I made it my mission to break that statistic. And those women that I befriended kind of helped me avoid things that they, you know, they did. So when I got out, I just kept my nose clean, man. I spent a lot of time alone, depressed. Felt like I would never have a social life again.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up going to a 12-step program and it helped me so much, tremendously. I met some people that I'm still friends with today. My social life was better than I could have ever imagined. I learned, and that's where I grew up. That's where I learned to become civilized, was all of those, that recovery community just took me under their wing and saved my freaking life, really.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. You know, especially for, you know, when you're behind bars, for those older women to have, you know, kind of helped you and guided you, like, that's a beautiful thing. Because also another thing about being behind bars is the women in there, I can't speak for men, but the women in there, like, they're no different than any of us. You know, that's a lesson I learned too. You know, like, oh, like, these are just women surviving and they're not bad people. And a lot of them will, you know, help you and will talk to you about life. And you get to have deep conversations with people who otherwise you probably wouldn't have talked to. And that really teaches you once you get out, like, how to be out in the world, you know, to not judge others, to not live your life as this crazy, you know, chaotic party person that you were so used to prior to being in there. And then with the 12-step programs, like, yes, I think that I'm grateful it worked for you. I know it doesn't work for everybody, but when it does work, it's a beautiful thing, you know. And how long have you been sober?
I started attending in what, 2011-ish. So I've got like 11 years of recovery under my belt, but wow. To be honest with you, I don't consider myself an alcoholic today. Like I don't have the physical reaction that others do with alcohol. I occasionally may have like two beers.
Yeah.
I've like really looked into it quite a bit. And
it's okay.
Whoopsies. Looked into it quite a bit, and I don't know. Honestly, my reaction to, I think alcohol was just my saving grace back then.
Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, and everyone's recovery journey is different. I was actually listening to Dopey today. It's another podcast, which is amazing. It's a recovery podcast. And he had a guest on there. That's what he was saying. Like, everyone's recovery journey is different. So some people choose to say, okay, like, I legit can't use anything. Like, if a substance enters my system, I'm right back to rock bottom real fast. But for some of us in recovery, that's not the case. Like, I use medical marijuana or else I won't sleep. Like, I have to be healthy. I have to, you know, be able to live my life. And so do you. And if you can handle drinking, then that's part of your recovery journey. And that's okay. And no one should judge anyone for that, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're all different.
And if I smoked marijuana, I wouldn't even know what my name was. I would hide in a room and be like, oh my God, life is too much. I can't do it. But alcohol, I don't know. I don't really like the way it makes me feel.
Yeah.
I really like feeling the healthy, sober. I love feeling, physically fit, mentally clear, spiritually fit. So I could live without alcohol. It's just the fact I don't have that, what they call an AA, the phenomenon of craving when I take a drink. That just doesn't happen to me.
Yeah, I can say it doesn't, like, alcohol and me, like, I don't drink because of what it makes me do and who I become when I drink. Like, I refuse to be that promiscuous asshole, you know, who's like out there, like, just making a fool of myself, you know. But you know, if that's something, like, if you're at a party and someone offers you your beer and you have one beer and you're able to have one beer and it doesn't lead you down the path of addiction, then that's up to you. Like, it's your body. You know your body and how you're going to react more than anyone else, you know. And I know in some of the 12-step rooms and stuff, like, if they heard you say that, like, they would judge you. They'd be like, oh, well, you're not really in recovery. It's like, well, actually, I am. Like, you don't write my recovery story. I do. You know?
Right.
So, and that kind of stuff pisses me off with those situations. But, you know, I think recovery is person to person, in my opinion. And like I said before, we're all different. So that's amazing, though, that you've been, you know, in recovery for 11 years and really, you know, doing wonderful things. So, like, what I know what you're doing in the world, but what are you doing in the world now? Like how are you providing for yourself and things like that?
So, let's see, in 8 years ago, my f- family, my mom and dad, ended up losing everything.
Oh, geez.
Due to alcoholism. So my mother does have the phenomenon of craving with alcohol. So if she takes one sip of alcohol, it could be days, months before she draws a sober breath.
Wow.
That she is the real deal alcoholic. And that she got really sick with alcoholism and they lost everything.
That's sad.
Yeah. And I was in my, early 20s at that time, and I still kind of relied on them.
Yeah.
A little bit for financial and stability. If I couldn't pay a bill, I could call them to help me. And I didn't have that anymore. And at that time, I was waitressing and bartending, and I wound up homeless. Wound up homeless.
Wow.
Lived in a really, really tiny shack-like house in the middle of a cornfield that a friend let me stay in. And it had no shower. It was just like one spigot where you would put the bathtub faucet thing.
Oh.
Yeah. No stove. It was pretty darn low. Ah. And that's where I was living.
Oh, geez.
And yeah. And I knew a lot of people that were doing like dishonest things to get out of their financial situation. And yeah, I had graduated high school with a 1.8 GPA. I didn't go to college. And I was like, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of this? I don't have any other option but to figure it out. I don't have a support anymore. This is how I'm going to live for the rest of my life, or some miracle is going to happen and I'm going to get out of this situation. And the easy way out would have been to hook myself, like a lot of other women I know. They were like, hey, you could be driving a BMW right now.
Mm.
All you could do is get some clients.
Yeah, and then end up in that world, which is a whole other debacle and debilitating, but I guess humiliating environment to be in. Like, that's, you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily, there was something inside of me that knew there was hope and knew that I didn't want to do that. And I'm thankful for all those people in prison that said, yeah, you'll be back. Mm-hmm. Because during that time, I remembered them. And I was like, well, I'm still not going to be that statistic. So watch what I do. So one day I was like reading the paper. Oh, and I had a prison TV.
Oh, and that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a little prison TV and I somehow figured out how to hook it up to some piece of garbage DVD player. And every night I watched The Pursuit of Happiness and Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, I love The Pursuit of Happiness. Oh, it's such a good one.
Yeah. And it just gave me hope. So yeah, one day I was reading the paper and I saw an ad that a company had placed looking for a construction cleaning crew. And something just hit me and I was like, I can do that. That's what I do, because I can do that.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, you're insane. You can't start a business with no money. You don't have any education. Come on, what are you thinking? And I was like, I'm thinking that I can do it.
Right.
And I just believed it and I envisioned it. And I imagined that somebody was going to give me a $500 investment for startup cash. And some guy's dad did that for me.
Wow, you're a good manifester.
Yes, it works. It works. So I did, and I just started showing up to job sites. And I was like, hey, do you guys have a construction cleaning crew? And eventually I got a few jobs and got a crew together, and I was bartending still, and I would use my tip money to pay them or to pay for the supplies. And within 6 months I had a project that was a six-figure contract for 280,000 square foot project.
Wow.
Yes. And on that site, I met my kid's father. And he taught me how to operate equipment, and we started a laborer business, and he ended up running the laborer side to the business. And 9 years later, I'm at a job site right now.
That's amazing. Good for you. You know, because a lot of times when, you know, people go through hard times, like, they don't see the silver lining. They don't see that there's a better way, that you know, and they do keep going back to jail or back to active addiction because they have no guidance, you know, to see it any other way. And you know, it's amazing that, you know, essentially you figured it out on your own. You know, I think, you know, for you, it was more of like, well, I'm going to prove you wrong. Like, everyone was against you. You know, you're in jail. Well, you're going to come back and you're like, actually, I'm not. And then you have this business idea and people are like naysaying it, but then you went out and did it anyway. And that's beautiful. And more people need to be like that, because people are always going to try to kill your dreams. That's a guarantee, because they don't understand it, or they're jealous of it, or whatever it might be. Or they could possibly have your best interest at heart and they don't want to see you, you know, try and fail and get hurt. But at the end of the day, you have to go after your dreams, and you're an example as to why it is possible.
Oh. Yeah. Oh. One of my favorite things about what I do is I've helped the bottom of the barrel people get employment. So I've picked up homeless guys for work. I've picked up hookers for work and gave them jobs.
Wow.
I go, the recovery community calls All American, which is the name of my company, when there's new people that moved into a house that need employment. And a lot of these people who've worked with me for years ended up starting an LLC. And now I contract. My main job today is contracting all of the people that I've trained to take on jobs. And most of them are all formerly incarcerated.
Wow.
Actually all of them. Yep. So, and I'm on on the board of a group called Determination Incorporated, and they help us formerly incarcerated people with their businesses. And it's just really cool to inspire and help others transform their lives too. It's really cool.
That's awesome. That's such a great feeling. And if anyone wanted to like find out more about your company or you, you know, where could they find you or reach out to you at?
Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, any All American Construction Contractors is the name of the business.
Awesome. Well, Sarah, I just have one last question for you, and that would be, what would your number one tip be for our listeners to allow the good things into their lives?
Wow. So the hardest battles, the battles that I described today, really were the ones that it was between myself. It was I thought I was battling other people, but really it was just a battle between me and myself. And I and you, whoever's listening, are capable of so much more than what you think you are. If you just get out of your own way and make it through those really, really uncomfortable, scary times, and just, you just don't give up and allow time for change to take place, it's just amazing what can actually happen. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, that made sense.
But yeah, basically, the hardest battles that I've ever fought were the ones between my head and my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the heart will always win if you just believe and listen to it.
Very true.
Your mind fool you.
Yeah, because that mind's the tricky one. It wants to protect you, right? That's your brain, like your ego or whatever wants to protect you. But at the end of the day, if you never go after anything or don't get out of your comfort zone, nothing will ever change. So.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say is prayer actually works. I'll let you whoever's listening, figure it out. But I can tell you it actually does work.
Awesome. Well, Sarah, it has been wonderful having you on. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today and your tips for us to, you know, get through life and let good things in. So I really appreciate it.
For sure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And as a reminder to everyone listening, remember, you are stronger than you think, and you can have the life you imagine, regardless of your past. Make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of the show, and I will talk to you all soon.